Sam, keeping it true, watching old movies so you don't have to. With the benefit of hindsight, we'll see where the movies truly awful, or did it change history? Good evening, and welcome back to the Benefit of Hindsight podcast, the movie podcast in which a father and son talk about movies that they watched together long ago.
We give each movie a memory score and then rewatch the movie to see whether or not it's better or worse than we remember, and then we score the movie again.
With me, as ever, is my son Sam. Good evening, Sam.
Good evening, Dad. How are you doing?
I'm good. I think I'm probably better than you. You sound a bit bunged up. Bit of a cold there.
I realise it might sound quite obvious now that I think about it. Yeah, I've got a cold.
Oh, bless. Well done you for powering through the podcast. I'm sure our listener out there will appreciate it.
I hope so.
Yeah. Hey, here's an interesting factoid.
Okay.
Would you like to hear it?
I would love to hear it, yeah.
We had a listener email us this week. And he all the way from Portugal, actually.
Oh, wow.
I've never heard of this place. It's called Lule in Portugal.
Oh.
And the guy who emailed us is called Sergio. So thank you to Sergio Lule in Portugal. I hope I'm saying that correct. And he emailed us about our Thunderbirds podcast.
Okay.
And he said he really liked our podcast. He thought it was hilarious, but that we were mean about Thunderbirds, which was a lost classic movie, and one of the most underrated movies of that particular time period. But otherwise, loves the podcast, but said we were wrong about Thunderbirds. He also said, "I don't have a question for you. So, but please read this out on your podcast, Thunderbirds." Is the lost classic of the early 2000s. So thank you, Sergio, for that email. And we don't have a question this week. What are we going to do?
It's funny because I actually did have a question for you and I thought it might work quite well on the podcast.
Oh, okay.
Isn't that convenient?
So it's arguably quite convenient. If you're out there and you're suspicious of us, it is arguably quite convenient and otherwise utterly genuine, and you can't see us winking on the podcast. So happy days. So is this a listener question that's actually a Sam question for me?
What? Yeah.
So, okay. Oh, change. We fear change, but I'm ready for your question. Let's hear it.
Okay. In fairness, I'd already thought about this and wanted to ask you. Because the latest Mission Impossible has been released, a great film.
Certainly has.
Mm-hmm. I had a question. Out of all of the Mission Impossible films, if you had to do one of the stunts, like you had to actually do it, which one would you pick?
Wow. Oh, that's such a good question.
It is.
I think I can answer without hesitation, surprisingly.
Okay.
And honestly, for all the listeners out there, in our preamble before the podcast, I didn't know this question was coming. So my answer, which I can give without hesitation, is motorcycle, cliff, parachute.
That's so weird because that was my answer too.
There we go. That's it's almost fun. Like we're related.
Yeah. We're going to have the same reason. Of all of the dangerous sort of things that you could do, that's the one where you don't have to hold your breath. You don't have to rely on something other than you just falling and a parachute. And I think that's the most exciting and arguably the least dangerous. Like, I don't want to climb a building. I don't want to hang off a plane. That kind of thing, yeah.
I just think there's got to be a moment during that experience because it's short. So reflecting on the movie that we've both seen but not together, all that stuff on the biplane, that's 2, 3, 4, 5 days work. That you've got to do it more than once. It looks exhausting and it's amazing. It's great that he does his own stunts. But this is 30 seconds.
Yeah, exactly.
So however terrified you are, it all happens in 30 seconds. And if it goes wrong, what a way to go.
Yeah, that's a good point. I think I saw somewhere that it took them 8 takes to do it, but they used the first take anyway. So at that point, was it just Tom Cruise having a bit of fun?
I think so. There's a great bit of footage that I saw as well, which is, I don't know if you've seen this, it's like a bit of backstage footage. And Simon Pegg is there on the day.
Yeah.
And he's saying, there's Tom, what a guy, look at him, I can't believe he's going to do it. And then when he goes off, he says, and it's like just absolute horror and shock and excitement. It's like awestruck by Tom Cruise. So, but I think for me, the main reason is what I've just said. If it goes wrong, that's the way to go.
Yeah. That is the way to go.
You can go with grey with tubes in your face, or or you can ride a motorcycle off a cliff in a blaze of glory.
Perfect. It's not a hard choice, yeah.
It's not. So yeah, and by the way, listeners, if you're out there and you are interested, if we were doing Benefit of Hindsight for the latest installment in the Mission Impossible franchise, I'd go solid 9.
I'd probably give it a 10, but I might be a bit too generous.
I would give it a 9 because I thought the first installment of this one was marginally better. So taking the two films together, it'd be 10 and 9 and a 9.5 overall.
Yeah, fair enough. I feel like the first one was a bit of a flop somehow, but I do like that one a lot, yeah.
We were saying this, and we'll move on to Nick Cage and National Treasure in just a moment, but let's just hang on this thought, because we were having a chat before we came on to record the podcast. So we were saying, or I was saying, that I think arguably Mission Impossible is one of the most successful film franchises of all time. Maybe not financially, but it has just never gone away. It's never needed to be rebooted. It's never gone away, and we'll come back and do a nostalgia thing. Every 3 or 4 years for the last 30 years, there has been one of these movies.
I feel like as well, it has a soft reboot every now and then, and it just reinvents itself but continues to work.
Yeah, yeah. I really liked it. I thought it was great.
Me too.
God bless Tom Cruise. And final Tom Cruise point, and an obvious one, he's 62.
I know. If I'm doing that at 62, just, I'd be quite glad.
It's just not, exactly, there's just no way that it's allowed to be that cool at 62. Actually, can I just add a Queen thing here? Because Queen got an award yesterday.
Oh, wow.
And so they've sort of been on the on Tinternet receiving their award. And one of these lifetime achievement awards. So obviously there's photographs of Brian and Roger doing the rounds, what's left of Queen. And they are now 78 and 76 respectively. And they look amazing.
Yeah, that's true.
God bless them. Anyway, let's move on and get into our podcast format. I think we'll move into our new segment, which is what we're loosely calling Sam's Pointless Advice.
Yeah, I've still got a few to go.
I'm very excited.
Today's is, you can technically eat anything as long as you get a small enough piece of it.
That is true.
Yeah, I wouldn't recommend it though, again, but there you go.
A very small piece of, say, for example, cyanide is presumably the argument against your advice.
That's a good point, yeah. But at least you've eaten it.
That is true. I mean, you can eat it. There's nothing that the advice isn't that you should eat it. It's that you could eat it.
That is very similar to another piece of advice that I'll have in a future episode.
I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah.
Okay. So, okay, if you're out there and you're interested in Sam's advice, technically, eat anything. Fine, as long as it's a small amount.
Within reason.
Within reason. Not cyanide. Don't try this at home. So anyway, moving on to the body of the podcast, Sam and I have been away and plucked up the courage to watch the 2004 Nicolas Cage classic, or as I like to think of him, Nick Cage classic, National Treasure, which from memory I gave 4 to. What did you give it?
I also gave it a 4. Yeah, we're on the same page.
Okay, and Dad's pointless question of the week is, do you think your score will change?
I think it might have, yeah. I think it's sort of in motion of being higher or lower, but we'll see.
Yeah, I think my score has changed. And I'd like to start with a controversial question, if I may.
Go for it.
Okay, controversial question of the week, number one. Can Nicolas Cage act?
Yes.
Okay, good. I agree. Controversial question number two would be, why didn't he do that in this film then?
Ouch. I don't know. I think his level of acting is very different to somebody else's level of acting, where he will just play the movie as Nick Cage playing a character. So yeah. It's like, it's not Nick Cage as himself. It's Nick Cage in National Treasure starring Nick Cage as Benjamin Franklin Gates. As Nick Cage.
As Nick Cage. As Nick Cage. There's a great movie, actually, which you may or may not have seen, in which Nick Cage does play himself. I can't remember what it's called.
It's the...
it's really good fun.
Is it The Unbearable Weight of something Talent or something like that?
Of Incredible Talent or something like that. Yeah. I actually love that movie. I thought it was great.
And I need to watch it again.
Actors send themselves up. Yeah. But I was watching this movie thinking, this man is either the finest actor of his generation or he isn't. I will tell you right now, hand on heart, I don't know whether or not he's good or really bad.
I don't know. I think, because I'd seen him recently in a different film, Wild at Heart it was called, and he's very Nick Cage in that film, and I think he just has to be over the top and Nick Cage-esque, whereas in this film, I just described Nick Cage as being Nick Cage-esque. That doesn't make any sense. But in this film, he kind of dials it down and tones it back a bit. I'm sure there's an episode of Community, actually, where someone becomes Nick Cage.
Yeah. I also thought in this movie that some fairly decent actors were not at their best. So John Voight, fairly decent actor, playing the dad, not at his best. Sean Bean? Not at his best in this movie, is he?
No, not at all.
I mean, you know, folks, this is Boromir. This is maybe the first film we did after being Boromir in Lord of the Rings, where he is by some degree one of the best actors in the whole thing. And in this, he was just like, he had a silly haircut.
Yeah, he definitely phoned it in.
He definitely did.
It's just another paycheck. He did. He didn't need it because he had the paycheck from Lord of the Rings. But...
Yeah, absolutely. Although apparently none of them got paid very much for Lord of the Rings. They were quite grumpy about it.
Oh, that's true, yeah.
Yeah, a little bit of a pointless trivia there. Sean Astin wrote a book called There and Back Again, An Actor's Tale. I don't know where he got the idea for that title from. And then he grumbled quite a lot about how much he was getting paid.
I think Kate Blanchett said she got paid in sandwiches, though.
Yeah, well, Sean Astin got $250,000 for his role in Lord of the Rings.
Right.
How does he live?
Exactly.
How does he feed his kids? Poor Sean.
Has to be a farmer.
So our first observation then is that three of the main actors in this movie aren't at their best, but then we're not sure whether Nick Cage is. What about the rest of the cast? Any significant comments on that?
No, but is it to do with very high caliber actors or close to that in a kids film? Do you think they sort of go, okay, I'm going to dial it back a bit. Maybe I don't need to do quite as much because my audience is young people. Like, they're not going to be too fussed about the sort of the big actors doing a big role as much as they are just seeing a film. Maybe that's just what it is.
I think there's a little bit about that. If you go through the cast, okay, and a sort of slightly repetitive point, but we'll do it anyway. Nick Cage is Nick Cage. Harvey Keitel. But Harvey Keitel is a magnificent actor. And in this, he's just cast as FBI guy 101.
Yeah.
He's John Voight's dialing it in. Diane Kruger. Diane Kruger's a great actress. She's dialed it in. Sean Bean. Christopher Plummer. The Christopher Plummer.
That's right, yeah.
And
I will say, though, that I think, and I always do this when we watch a movie with a sequel, but I do think it suffers from a weird sequel syndrome where the sequel is actually better. And I think for me, one of the things that stands out about the sequel is that John Voight gets a bigger role and he's a part of the adventure. Yeah. Whereas in this one, he sort of turns up, acts like he doesn't want to be there, and then he's involved at the end, and it just seems a bit random. Whereas in the second one, it's more of a family film and they work together. And I think for me, that maybe the script got better by the time they made a second one. And that's where it worked. That's where the strengths are.
I think that's a really good point about the script. The script is borderline, I was going to say implausible. It's not borderline implausible. It is implausible. And it's therefore borderline ridiculous.
Yeah.
I mean, and of course you can, it's easy to be critical of this, but crucially the script is, it's an invention. And that's such an obvious thing to say. There's no source material. You're writing it from the ground up.
Yeah.
I think there's possibly some influence from the Tom Hanks movie, The Da Vinci Code.
Ah, yeah.
Where you're mixing fact, fiction, faction to create this story. But the idea that you can just waltz into the National Archives and steal the Declaration of Independence does seem a bit stretchy.
Yeah. Do you know, for me, that kind of ruined it, where, you know, the whole premise is he's going to steal the Declaration of Independence. There's a big dramatic line that I'm sure is a meme about it. And then all of a sudden it just cuts to them doing it, they do it, and then cue movie. And it was a bit like, yeah. I was like, shouldn't the whole movie just be a heist movie to get the Declaration of Independence rather than find a treasure with all of the clues?
Yeah, we assume that Nick Cage, on his own, can waltz in and steal it. And I think you could spend half an hour on that and feel that the movie was better because of it.
True, yeah. I really want to come to this point because I did make a note of it and I will be upset if I don't get to say it. The fact that he goes and buys a or has to pay for it, like it's a poster, and then he also buys a poster. It's a genius joke, but it really, really bothered me that the sticker was on the poster directly. That's going to ruin the poster if you peel it off. And it just bothered me. It's playing on my mind the whole time. I just wanted to get it out there.
I know what you mean. It's like when you buy I don't know, this is a terrible example, but when you buy a toy or a record or a CD and there's a really cool sticker on it, but you have to peel the sticker off to open the box or something.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sure there are people out there that have like CDs or records or box sets they bought that they have to go and buy another one because they want one that's in pristine condition.
Yeah. You're right.
And even the sort of involvement of the person who works in the National Archives, you would have thought maybe she was a bit better at her job.
Well, yeah.
You might have thought that maybe she'd be a little bit more attentive to protecting that. So getting back to the script, do you think it's a good script or a bad script? Am I being mean?
I think it's... It's like a colour by numbers script, and they've only coloured so much of it in. Like there should be more to it, but they've missed parts out.
Yeah.
Like expand upon him stealing the declaration, expand upon everything else. Don't just make it a chase scene, and then all of a sudden glasses, wall, clues. Here we are. Here's the treasure. Also, why do they need two rooms? Why do they need a fake out room that goes, oh, the treasure's not here, and then they find the treasure anyway?
Yeah. And then at the end of it, because they're all really rich.
Yeah.
I think somewhere in there, it's just the idea to tell a classic Saturday morning adventure movie with a happy ending.
Yeah. I mean, we said last time that it was a wet Wednesday where you just go and see it because there's something to do. It is that kind of film.
And it was a surprise... hit in inverted commas, because it was one of those movies that Disney ended up spending $100 million on. And by the way, I'd forgotten it was a Disney movie.
Yeah,
that had gone from my head. And it was one of those things where it just got more and more and more expensive as they were making the movie, and there was just this horrific fear that it was just going to be a massive box office bomb. Actually, it did all right. Made $350 million. It resonated with an audience. People liked it.
Do you know what was a bomb, though? The Disney Plus series that they made based on this, which I have seen but completely forgot that it existed.
I didn't actually know that it existed.
Yeah, it totally shouldn't.
Absolutely, no, I didn't know. And I'd sort of forgotten as well there was a sequel.
Yeah, I think I prefer the sequel, you know.
But what's really interesting then, so the sequel comes out in 2005 or 2007.
Yeah.
We must have seen it.
I think we did. I think we must have gone, there's a sequel to that film that we watched years ago, let's go and see it. And I know that sounds really obvious, but I think we were interested in enough to see the other one.
I think Disney described it as a surprise hit and right. had only intended to make one. And then when it was reasonably successful, they went, okay, well, let's make another one. And they did. And there was a couple of movies, and between them, they made sort of $800-900 million.
Yeah. They didn't even have to ask Nick Cage. He was just ready to do it.
Well, yeah, he was just ready. It's not difficult. I thought it was quite nicely directed by a guy called John Turtelaub. I think I've said his name right there.
Yeah.
I think it was a fairly game piece of direction.
Yeah. I think he was one of those, he's one of those directors where he does his job, but he does his job well. Like, there's that faction that we've discovered, but he just does it unnoticeably, which I think works, yeah.
Yeah, I think so. Interesting career has your man, John, because I don't think he's really been kind of, he's not one of these really big Hollywood directors, but again, just a working director. And he's had some success, he did both National Treasures. He did Cool Runnings, which was a massive surprise.
Oh, wow.
I don't know if you remember Cool Runnings.
Yeah.
That was one of those, cost 10p and made millions. And he did Phenomenon with John Travolta, which is a shockingly bad movie. But I think the pinnacle of his career is in 2018, he did The Meg.
Oh, yeah. I've always wanted to see that, weirdly enough.
Yeah. And he also directed the television series as well.
Oh dear. I thought he would have cleared his name of that completely. Never mind.
But it is, I think, a mixture of Tom Hanks doing that thing, a bit of Indiana Jones, a bit of heist. It's a very mixed bag, isn't it?
Yeah, I kind of saw it as the less cool Indiana Jones, but almost slightly Mission Impossible for kids, especially with like the van chase sequence. Yeah.
Uh-huh. One of the things that didn't land with me was the soundtrack. It didn't really catch. There's nothing in it that I can say about the soundtrack beyond service in the movie.
Yeah.
That makes sense?
See, this is something I wanted to talk about, and it's been playing on my mind since I watched it, which was only a couple of days ago. But the soundtrack just didn't do it for me because it felt all over the place. At first, I thought it was Alan Silvestri doing it because a lot of his music sounds the same. But it, mm-hmm. no offense, but it wasn't him doing it. And then it just became a bit of a mess. Like every now and then it'd try and do a modern upbeat sort of tune and then it would go classical. And sometimes that works and it works really well. Like Hans Zimmer could easily pull that off. But this just didn't. It felt like it was all over the place. One second it was all techno, and then the next it was all dramatic, and it didn't work.
Yeah, the guy who did it is an interesting guy. His name is Trevor Rabin. Sorry if you're out there listening, Trev. Your name isn't.
Yeah, and really
he
sorry.
He sort of begins life as session guitar player, features with lots of different bands. He played with Yes, and he was appeared on albums throughout the 1970s. He was in Jethro Tull for a time and things. And then he sort of changes to being a film composer.
Right.
And actually, some of his film scores are, there'd be things that people would sort of reference. He is responsible for Armageddon, Deep Blue Sea, a little later, Snakes on a Plane, Get Smart, I Am Number Four, and things. And he kind of seems to make that he has a sort of a bit of a career as the guy who does things, movie soundtracks, and then he just stops, and he goes back to being a working musician. So more recently, he's just been playing in bands. But the final thing to say, I think, about this is a movie that demands a theme.
Yeah,
and you don't get one.
See, the slight spoilers. The film that I'm going to pick at the end of this episode, as soon as I think of it, I can hear the theme song. And I think that's what this was kind of missing, is that sort of big dramatic piece of music that you can connect to it.
Yeah, it's a perfectly serviceable soundtrack, but that's all.
Yeah.
We talked a little about box office, and how many Oscars do you think the movie was nominated for?
Oh, I can't imagine many, so maybe one at least?
No, none.
Okay.
What's really interesting, it won an award from the British BMI Film and TV Awards, and it won the award for Best Film Music.
Right. Well, no, I can't say it. That's weird.
I mean, it definitely had nominations from Teen Choice Awards, Saturn Awards, World Stunt Awards, Best Family Feature Film that was a drama, but it didn't win any of those. It won for Best Music, and I can't see it.
No.
So you must therefore have countless amounts of Nick Cage trivia, National Treasure trivia, and/or out of pocket takes. So I'd be delighted to hear them.
Funny enough, I don't actually have trivia about Nick Cage. It's mostly Sean Bean.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting.
This is one that I didn't have to look up, but it's there anyway. This is one of the few movies where Sean Bean's character does in fact not die. I was expecting him to be honest.
That's such a good observation. He does die a lot, doesn't he?
I was wondering if it's part of his contract, but clearly not. Could they do it in a kids' film, though?
Yeah, it's interesting that nobody died. Yeah, I was expecting somebody to die along the way, yeah.
Somebody has to go to prison.
It's so true.
Yeah. Apparently, the director, whose name you pronounced better than I ever could earlier, says the initial rough cut for this film was around 4 hours long. I want to see that. I'm curious about what happens in that. Considering he steals the Declaration of Independence in like 5 minutes, what actually happens?
There's a 40-minute heist scene that they've cut out.
Yeah.
I demand. I'm going to start a petition. I demand to see the director's 4-hour cut of this movie.
We should start that call. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a modern classic that the world will never see. Eat your heart out, Martin Scorsese.
The real National Treasure was the 4-hour film we discovered along the way.
Exactly, that's it.
During a press junket, Sean Bean was asked if he believed the treasure existed. Apparently he said, it's probably in Sheffield, which is his hometown. It's quite funny. Good for you, Sean.
it's as likely.
You earned that paycheck, Sean.
Yeah. Did you know that the Declaration of Independence actually doesn't have any words on it anymore?
Wait, really?
The ink faded probably about 1876. It's basically impossible to read.
How did Nick Cage find the treasure then?
It was lemon juice.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
There is that awful moment in this movie. There's a moment where... There's always a moment in every movie where you just think, I wish they hadn't done that, because it ruins everything. And the moment in this movie where they did that was when they're doing putting the lemon juice and it's not working, and his dad says, it needs heat.
Yeah.
And they look at each other and they lean down and they breathe gently. I thought, oh, why would you do that? You wouldn't do that. You would go, okay, I'll get the hairdryer then. Your go-to isn't, it's okay, I'll get the hairdryer.
I know what you mean, but for some reason I just remembered hairdryers, so I'd forgotten that they did the breath, and then I was expecting an old hairdryer, which then turned up, but yeah.
Yeah, it was just really, icky's not the right word, it was just unnecessary.
You've already ruined this important document with lemon juice, don't put your breath on it.
Absolutely, yeah.
I found it really weird, and this joke sort of had a punchline, but you had to be there. I don't know if that makes any sense. I was a bit confused about how these two main characters had only met a couple of days ago and suddenly they decided to kiss. And I wrote as a joke, this isn't a film for kids. Next, they'll be holding hands. And then by the end of the film, they were holding hands. It's like a weird prediction. Yeah.
It is so obvious they were going to get it on. It was just like, you know, and again, it's a script thing, isn't it? It's like, as you say, it's like colouring by numbers, but someone forgot to put the green in.
I think it's one of those films, though, where it keeps a consistent cast. So by the second film, they're still together and it's the same cast. Whereas I feel like a George of the Jungle type situation, they would recast everyone for the sequel.
Every cliche that you could possibly have is in there. Even the guy who plays the comic relief, who's actually very good.
Yeah.
He's really funny. But like, classic comic relief.
Yeah. He has a good arc, I think, like, over the course of both films, anyway. But I do think that is an interesting character. And I liked his jokes, because sometimes it's just a bit much and it's annoying. Like, the whole scene where he discovers that he knows something that they don't, and then and then they know something that he thought he didn't. Yeah. It's genius. I love it.
Yeah, it's actually a really nice part, and he's probably the one actor that comes out of it with any credit.
Yeah,
that's really harsh. I don't mean that. They all come out of it unscathed, right? But he's probably the one that, for me at least, was a character I enjoyed the most.
Yeah, Nick Cage was always going to come out unscathed though, because it's Nick Cage.
Because Nick Cage, absolutely. Yeah. Do you think the fact that his surname is Coppola may have helped him?
Probably. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Probably didn't hurt him, did it?
So, the end of this film is Nick Cage explaining how he wants the movie to end, rather than the movie just ending. So he goes over everything that he wants to happen, and then that's it.
And that's it, yeah.
Better than a Michael Bay film ending.
I never even thought of that. Yeah. Oh, don't be mean on Michael Bay.
Yeah, I shouldn't have said that.
The greatest director of a generation.
Absolutely. We've said that before, yeah. Underrated, for sure.
Michael Bay, Steven Spielberg, geniuses. They're from the same mold. They are. George Lucas, even.
Yeah. Where was Spider-Man during the chase scene?
Had he been invented?
Probably. I'm sure it was in New York.
Yeah.
He should have been there.
That's true.
Isn't he everywhere?
That is true. What? Yeah, you would have thought Spider-Man would have been tingling with, good heavens, somebody stealing the Declaration of Independence. I need to be there.
Is it the same city?
It's a different universe, though, isn't it?
Oh, okay, fair enough. Yeah.
There'll be a universe in which there isn't a Spider-Man, and that's the one that we inhabit, hence so much crime. We have to invent him.
Yeah. There's a weird connection now that I've said out loud, is that Nick Cage is about to be in the live-action Spider-Man series.
That's cool. Yeah. Not Spider-Man, though, surely.
He's Spider-Man Noir. Again, he was that in the animated film, but now he's doing it live action.
Cool. Have you ever seen the documentary about Nick Cage Superman movie?
I don't think I've seen the documentary, but I am aware of it, yeah. That he was, yeah.
It's a really interesting documentary that was made. They were so close to making this Tim Burton Superman movie.
Yeah.
Starring Nicolas Cage. And everything was done, you know, casting, costumes, storyboarding. They get just to the point of principal photography and the plug is pulled on them.
Yeah.
And it's a really interesting documentary made about it.
Because he made a brief, very CGI cameo in the Flash film as Superman. Right. Yeah. We don't talk about that.
Do you know why we talk slightly off topic? No, Flash film. Blah. The Flash, great. The Flash movie. Nah.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's a different podcast, isn't it? Getting completely off topic, you know, there's movies that have been made that are basically finished, and then the movie company they lose confidence in them. So somewhere out there is a Batgirl. There's a Batgirl movie out there somewhere, which is basically finished, and there's also a Wile E. Coyote and Roadrunner movie.
That's
out there
right.
As well.
Yeah, I'd love to see.
I would watch those movies.
Yeah.
Do you not think that's a marketing thing? So in a year or two, they'll just go, whatever, we'll stick it out. And it'll become a massive hit because people are just curious.
That's a good point, yeah. It could just be a cash grab technique. It's a dangerous one, but yeah.
Because in light of the popularity of streaming, what's the worst that, how bad does it have to be to say, no yeah. one can ever see this?
I mean, it worked for Zack Snyder's Justice League, and people were like, yeah, let's get that, and then they watched it and loved it, but it never never went further than that. So it is possible.
No. Anyway, we're slightly off topic there. any out-of-pocket takes on National Treasure?
Yeah, this movie appreciates Nick Cage so much that as soon as he appears on screen, it shows the words National Treasure. True story.
I actually had in my head the question, is the National Treasure Nick Cage?
Absolutely. Protect him at all costs.
Protect Nick Cage at all. He is a national treasure.
He can protect himself.
Yeah.
It's just turned into a Nick Cage episode because I just thought of another thing to say about him.
Go on then.
You know, it's The Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent is the name of the film.
That's the one.
And they make a big deal about how good Paddington 2 is. I don't see the hype. I don't really like it. It's a good joke.
I've never seen it.
Yeah, there's something about the Paddington films that I just can't get into.
I have heard people rave about them.
Yeah.
Like people who would not go and see them have said, I watched it and I loved it and I've now seen all of them.
I mean, I have seen all of them. I think, if anything, the first one's the best one because it's got Peter Capaldi in it. That's not true. He is in it, but that's not the reason. But yeah, it's just, I don't know. I find the story of the second one just lackluster and boring.
I can't join in. I've never seen it, but maybe I should watch it on your recommendation.
Not that good a recommendation.
lackluster and boring. They didn't put that on the poster. They didn't put that on the poster, did they?
It didn't fit.
Yeah. Also, Nick Cage, is he wearing a wig in this movie?
Oh, I don't know. Quite possibly. It's a very Nick Cage kind of thing to do.
He had very thick hair. looked a bit syrupy to me. Yeah. Like I think there's definitely a bit of a wig happening there.
I do really like the chase scene where they split up into two groups and one has the case for the declaration and the other has the declaration. That is a good chase scene, but maybe a little bit implausible.
I like the van chase as well. It's actually a nice. It's a good chase. You know, in the we need a chase scene because we're writing a script by numbers. It's a pretty good one.
Yeah.
Actually, that probably I should probably save this to the end, but that actually is a pretty decent summary of the movie. We're going to invoke every single movie cliche that we can think of, and all of them will be decent.
Yeah. Good point. It's all the good ones put together.
On that rather interesting note, shall we move to our benefit of hindsight rewatch scores then?
I think we should, yeah.
Okay, so I chose the movie. Does that mean I get to go first or second?
First.
Okay, so I think I gave it a 4. I think it's either a 1 or a 10. So my inclination is to go right down the middle and go 5, but I'm not going to do that. I'm going to give it. Are you ready?
Yeah.
I'm going to give it 7.
Oh.
Because it is just a perfectly ordinary movie.
Yeah.
It didn't win any awards. Doesn't set, but it's great. What fun it was to watch. Nick Cage is genuinely awesome in it. And if you gave it a 10, I wouldn't be surprised. If you gave it a 0, I wouldn't be surprised. It's solid 7 out of 10.
Fair enough. Yeah. I feel like my conclusion is kind of brief, but I feel like this conversation has made it more interesting than I actually thought while I was watching it. Which sounds really harsh, but it just felt like one of those put on in the background kind of films. But if I think about it, I did enjoy it, but I think I'm only going to go up to a 5 and just be in the middle for myself, because I did like it, but I'm not in a hurry to see it again.
Yeah, I would be in a hurry to watch the sequel though.
Yeah, definitely, me too.
I'm glad it's coming. But then what that does is it does give it an overall score of 6, which I think in the great pantheon of our 47 episodes is probably about where it should land, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It's one of those films, yeah.
Absolutely. And your one word review of National Treasure?
I'm gonna steal from you and say cliche.
Yeah, I think my one word review, very obvious, I think I'm just gonna go with fun. Because it is.
I can agree with that one, yeah.
It is your turn to choose the next movie. By the way, the next episode, the next movie that you're choosing is number 48.
Oh.
Staggeringly.
Uh-oh.
Which means I get a choice, number 49, and then you have to choose for yourself to watch Cloverfield.
Funny enough, I had a dream the other night where I had to watch Cloverfield, and then I ended up living it in the dream. But it still plays on my mind that much.
I'm also really glad, genuinely glad, that you have to choose to watch it. And you can therefore choose not to. If I said no, okay, to Cloverfield, and it's on the podcast, it's done. You have to watch it. But you have to choose. So it's your turn this week, then me, then Cloverfield.
I could just completely flip the script and choose Cloverfield now. But I'm not going to do that.
No.
No, I need to sleep. So. So, I've chosen a film, as you do. I did reference earlier that when I think of this film, I can hear the music. And I didn't realise it was directed by Sean Levy of Stranger Things fame as well. It's also got Ben Stiller in it, who's one of my favourite actors. It's the 2006 Night at the Museum.
Good choice.
It is a good choice, yeah.
I didn't know that was a Levy movie.
Neither did I.
Yeah. Oh, interesting. That's really cool. Yeah. Well, let's hear your memory score of Night at the Museum.
I really like this film. That's why I chose it. It's just a great film. It's one of those where it's, I want to call it like a bottle episode type thing, where it's in one location for most of the film. But it's got loads of twists and turns and it's really creative. So I think I'm going to go in quite strong here and give it an 8 out of 10.
Wow. That is strong. I like this movie as well. I like it because it's good fun. I like it because I don't mind Ben Stiller. I think he's a Marmite actor.
Oh.
But actually, having said that, I don't mind him. I would give it 6 out of 10, but I'm going to invent a new maneuver.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And I'm going to invent a new maneuver for the memory score, not the rewatch score.
Right.
And so my maneuver is called the Robin Williams maneuver.
Ah, okay.
Which means any movie with Robin Williams in gets 2 bonus points.
2? Whoa.
Yeah. So I'm going to give it 8-2.
Okay,
I'm going to give
cool.
it 8 as well. And 2 of those points are for the late, great, magnificent Robin Williams.
Absolutely. Can't argue there.
So that's decent. That's 16 for Night at the Museum.
Deserved. Even though we haven't watched it yet, but sure.
Let's see how it holds up. I tell you one thing I do remember about that movie.
Yeah?
It's got Rami Malek in it.
It does, yeah. I forgot about that, yeah. And Ricky Gervais, yeah. But yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Oscar winner Rami Malek.
Yeah, wow. Dick Van Dyke as well.
Dick Van Dyke.
What did you just call
it? I tell you what, there's quite a number of maneuvers in this, isn't there?
Yeah. This could just, we could give it a 0, but based on the maneuvers, it could be a 10.
Well, you like Ben Stiller.
Yeah.
Fair dues. Robin Williams gives it a couple. Dick Van Dyke is surely a maneuver in there somewhere, right?
Yeah.
You might get a bonus point for Ricky Gervais. You might get a bonus for Rami Malek, him who played Freddie Mercury and won an Oscar.
Yeah.
In the worst film of all time ever. But
yikes.
There you go. You never know.
I'm actually quite curious because when I was watching Stranger Things the other day, Sean Levy, who had directed that episode, made a cameo. And now I wonder if he's actually in every film because now I know what he looks like. So it'd be quite interesting to see.
Let's see if he is. Owen Wilson. Nah, he doesn't get any bonus points, does he, Owen Wilson?
No, I don't think so. Wow. No. I can't do it. Wow. What, how does he do it?
I don't know, but even though your impression is not very good, I immediately knew it was Owen Wilson.
Thanks. Do you know what day it is?
I don't know what day it is.
We have officially come full circle. It's World Otter Day.
Yeah.
I've been waiting to tell you that all day.
Wow, that's awesome. It's World Otter Day. Oh, we need to make another t-shirt.
Celebrated annually on the last Wednesday in May, with 2025's date being May 28th. There's a timestamp you know.
I'm so happy. If you are a regular listener of our podcast, and we hope that you are, we observe World Otter Day. It's literally made my day.
It's perfect, isn't it? Because I heard it on the radio, and I was like, that can't be true. That can't be today. But no, it is World Otter Day.
Wow. We're so, I can't beat that.
That's got to be Ian Fleming's birthday. The end? Like, completely, or just the end of the episode?
No, I mean, there's it's the end of the episode. There's nothing we can do at this point that will trump the fact that it's World Otter Day again.
Not even my impression joke.
Your Owen Wilson impression.
No, I've got another joke.
Oh, let's hear it.
I'll read it verbatim. I said to my nephew, "Do you want to hear a really good Batman impression?" He rolled his eyes. "Go on then." I growled, "No, not the kryptonite." He said, "That's Superman." So I said, "Thanks, I've been practicing a lot." There you go.
Happy World Otter Day.
Yeah, World Otter Day. Sponsor of the Benefit of Hindsight podcast.
Yeah, it definitely is. We need to contact them.
Contact the otters.
Or the people that do otter stuff.
It's got International Otter Survival Fund. That might be one.
We're getting in touch.
Yeah. We'll make a big donation.
Make a massive donation to the International Otter Survival Fund, and it's perfect.
It says, if you are running an event and would like it added to the map, then email us and we can add it. We should totally do a sponsored podcast for otters.
Absolutely. I am emailing them tomorrow morning first thing.
Nice.
100%. Anyway, please do continue to email us with questions or comments or celebrations of World Otter Day. And if you've got any idea what we can do to prepare for next year's World Otter Day, because it has kind of caught us a little bit. But, you know, maybe there's a whole... We can do a festival, a movie show-in of some description. We can get everybody in who listens to the podcast can just come on and we'll have a big old party and raise money for otters.
Tell us your otter facts.
Any otter facts that are out there, it's the perfect plan. And on that... Go on.
Have you ever seen that YouTube clip of Ewan McGregor where he's talking about otters and he describes how they go underwater to grab a rock and then break open whatever it is that they're eating? It's a great clip.
I have not, but that's another thing that I'm going to go away and watch immediately.
Yeah.
Love a bit Ewan McGregor. And on the Ewan McGregor /otter bombshell, it's time for us to say goodbye. Thank you for listening to our podcast. We'll be back next week with our ruminations on the classic movie Night at the Museum. Then it's my choice. And then Cloverfield.
Oh.
But let's do Night at the Museum first. I'm excited. Yeah. Okay, then. Thanks very much for listening. Bye.
Bye.
Do you need to sneeze now or something?
I can do if you want me to. Wait, what?
Yeah, go on.
Achoo.
Well, because bless you.
Thank you.
Bless you. Can you now sneeze in the style of Owen Wilson?
Ka-chow! It's not Cars, which is also Owen Wilson.
Ah, totally cool.
Ka-chow! I can't actually do an impression of him. I thought I could. Wow.
That's great.
Was it really?
Wow.
That's better.
Oh, it is better. No, yours is better.
Does the cold help? Wow.
If you say goodbye... Can you say goodbye?
Goodbye. That wasn't quite right.
Yeah, right.
No.
Doesn't work.
I quit while I'm ahead.
Bye-bye then.
Bye.
Bye.
With the benefit of hindsight, we'll see, were the movies truly awful? Or did they change history?